Welcome to the Positive Persistence Podcast, where ordinary people inspire your extraordinary success. What's up, family? Today, we are joined by Monica Tanner. She's a relationship coach and creator and author of Secrets of Happily Ever After that helps couples ditch resentment so they can build a resilient marriage that's safe, passionate, and fun again. Monica Tanner, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ian. I'm so excited to be here with you.
I am glad that you're here, and I have been excited since we spoke last time to have you on the show, because there are a lot of things that I feel we need to talk about, unpack for our listeners and viewers, and selfishly for me too, just dealing with some things in my own personal life from my past that I like to get some insight on and some answers about potentially. So let's dive right into this bad boy. In our conversation we had earlier, you said that you come from a long line of divorce from grandparents, parents, and yet you fully believe that you have a happily ever after marriage. I was hoping that you could walk us through the moment that you realized that the story that you had been a part of before in your past and your upbringing wasn't going to keep repeating itself in your life, and what you did differently from that point.
I love this question because, just to clarify, I don't believe that living happily ever after means a life devoid of challenge, right? Mm-hmm. So my husband and I do face challenges, but we work really hard to face them together as a team. And we're constantly working on our skill set so that we can navigate and manage all of the emotions surrounding the challenges that we do and inevitably will continue to face. Happily ever after, if you've seen any movie, there's a challenge that the main characters have to face, and they learn more about themselves and they grow and they live happily ever after. I am determined to create a happily ever after story for my husband and I. I do believe, even though my parents and grandparents are divorced, that they also lived happily ever after. So there's not one way in which that looks. It's different for everyone. Mm-hmm. And I believe that I stand on the shoulders of giants, because even though my grandma and my mom both faced divorce, they also really were able to grow through that and learn a lot about themselves that they were able to teach me. And so I didn't have to make a lot of the same mistakes that they did. In that, I believe that my mom, after my mom and dad divorced, spent a lot of time and energy really figuring out what it means to just be loved, and that there is enough love in the world. And I think so much of her challenge in life was not feeling loved, feeling like she needed to earn love. And I faced that as well in midlife and in my marriage. And I think that so much of what my mom was able to learn about that and about herself saved me from some very painful decisions that she made. Yeah. So I think we get a little bit better every time. I know that my children will face challenges in life, but I hope that they're not the same challenges that I face. I hope that, you know, the work that my mom has done and that I have in turn done, my children will never question whether or not there's enough love or if they have to earn it or anything like that. So I think that to think that children or your children, depending on how well you raise them or teach them, are not going to face challenges is silly. We all face challenges. That's pretty much the point of life. But I hope that my children don't have to feel the pain of the same challenges that I faced.
Sure. Let's go back to the topic of earning love, because I think that's something that at least I have dealt with, still deal with to this day. And how do you... Or let me ask you this first, like, why do you feel that we fall into that rabbit hole of feeling that we need to earn love? And why does that follow us from childhood into adolescence, into early adulthood, to adulthood? And why is it so hard to shake?
For me, it was my childhood experiences mm-hmm. that gave me that belief that love needed to be earned and that mm-hmm. I had to be perfect or else people would leave me. Mm-hmm. And it was the experiences of my childhood. When I was 12, my parents divorced. My mom, not intending to abandon me, left to go pretty much find herself. And so I was left with my dad and a stepmom. And just the way that scenario played out, it was very difficult for me to earn the love of my stepmom. When I was 16, there was a custody battle between my mom and my dad. My mom hadn't moved back to where we were living yet. And so I was pretty much kicked out of my home with my dad and my stepmom and couch surfed friends' houses. As a child, I couldn't understand what I understand about it now. It felt very much like the people who loved me just didn't have a place for me. Mm-hmm. I felt very displaced. I felt very abandoned. That belief system in me was really strong that if I wasn't the perfect wife and the perfect mom, that combined with the divorces that I saw, that my husband would just walk away and leave me. Like I wasn't worth it. I needed to earn that kind of love. I had to prove that I was worth staying with. Mm-hmm. And that wreaked a lot of havoc in my relationship for many, many years. And it really was like I hit rock bottom. I became so debilitatingly anxious that I was going to make a mistake, that I couldn't take care of myself or my children. And I became a huge burden to my husband, who was trying to hold it all together and take care of me, which he should never have had to do that. But I'm so, so grateful that he stuck through that challenge with me and provided some disconfirming evidence. I could be human. I could be imperfect. And love wouldn't get withdrawn from me. And so while it was difficult for my husband to navigate that, he did so in a beautiful way, learning from my mom. Also through all of that, mm-hmm. I didn't give up on my family and take myself out of the ring. I stuck with it and my husband stuck with it and we stuck together. And that trust was built, that our relationship was resilient, that I could be imperfect and still be worth loving. And there just is so much there. And so I think that everybody has to kind of walk through their own crucible, if you will, to kind of dig out those false beliefs that we were wounded with in our childhood.
Yeah, I think that's such an important thing to talk about. As you mentioned that your husband was able to give you some disconfirming evidence, mm-hmm. because I feel that we so easily perceive ourselves in a certain way and create these negative emotions or negative thought patterns that we have without actual evidence of why we should or should not feel that way.
Well, a lot of times I think there is very real evidence. I mean, for me, my childhood experiences gave me proof that I couldn't earn love. But I thought that was what was needed, right? I thought if I could just be better, if I didn't make mistakes, if I was valuable to others, then they wouldn't leave me.
Would you not argue that that was, even though you have those experiences and you, I have those feelings and those emotions, which are valid, they're not necessarily the truth, right? Because if you're telling yourself that I'm not good enough or that I'm not lovable or that I need to be perfect for someone to love me, there isn't any like evidence of that being true. That's just how we feel because of our scars from our past experiences. And it's really hard to be able to heal from those without somebody who's able to point out that that's not true, that there's no evidence that you are not good enough. There is no evidence that you're not lovable. But
it's so painful when you say it out loud, those things, right? Yeah, absolutely. Right. But I would call them wounds. You know, the way I work with clients is you're wounded in relationship and therefore will be healed in relationship. But those wounds were very real to me. Mm-hmm.
I love that, what you just said. You're wounded in a relationship, so you'll be healed in relationship. And I believe, just for me personally, being wounded in my first marriage and now having the person that has helped me heal in my current marriage, it's so true, because without her love, I don't know if I would have been able to get over some of those wounds that I had from before.
You know, so having another, I would challenge you on that language just a little bit.
Please.
Because you had to learn to love yourself. Without her support, you wouldn't have been able to heal. But I feel that the healing is all about self-love. But your partner, you can have a partner that comes in and supports that healing beautifully, but they can't actually heal you.
I would agree with that. I would agree with that. I will rephrase my my last statement in saying that she provided the space, she provided the security for me to be able to do that, to be able to heal. But let's come back to that, because I have another question for you that I want to ask. And because I know that there are other people who probably grew up like me with models of marriage that were emotionally distant or maybe seemed emotionally shut down. Now, if someone has only that as an example for their happily ever after, what's the first mindset shift that they need to make to even start to believe that there is something better that's possible for them than what they've seen, what they've experienced with the two people that are supposed to be their model, their gauge for how to do it?
Yeah, that's such a beautiful question. And the reality is I don't know if it's the only way, but I have found in my work with couples and individuals that the only way to kind of change that mindset or that idea is to show them the cost of it. Because people come by those defenses, or I call them adaptations, honestly. You grew up in a family. This is the blueprint you got. Your adaptation to the environment that you grew up in is what kept you safe, helped you form as a human. It created the beliefs that you carry with you. And really, honestly, you might not know any different. And so it's not until you get into a relationship with someone who's like, I need you to open up. Like your shut offness is difficult for me to be in relationship with.
Yeah.
Then you start to see the cost of what you know and therefore look for a different way, right? And a lot of times it's going to take a coach or a therapist or some sort of work on your part to find the better way.
Which is not an easy thing to do, because you need to now separate yourself from all that you know. Mm-hmm. You need to separate yourself from probably part of your identity. Mm-hmm. To be able to do that. And you might be at a point then in your relationship where things have come to a head. To piggyback off of part of the conversation that we had before, you shared that your marriage was at a point to where on the verge of where you wanted to blow it all up. Mm-hmm. As you had mentioned, kind of like your mom.
That's all I knew.
Yeah, right. For someone who may be listening to this and feels that they may be in that same season, what does that look like in the verge of ready to blow things up on the day to day? Like, you may be feeling anxiety, you may be wanting to stay in bed all the time, or you're struggling with just dealing with the kids. And what is a turning point that at least help you stop that pattern in real time to start to flip things around for yourself when you were in that time?
So for me, what it looked like was debilitating anxiety. Mm-hmm. I was so afraid that I was going to do it wrong. And I was so overwhelmed with it. I had three little kids and a husband. We were building a business together. And I felt like I couldn't do it perfectly. And I wasn't doing it right. And I had no manual, no handbook, nobody telling me how I was supposed to do it. And I was so afraid of getting it wrong that I wasn't doing anything. Right? Like, I couldn't get out of bed. I wasn't dressing myself. I remember like a big kind of hallmark of this season or period of my life was sitting on the floor in my closet, just paralyzed. I don't know what to wear. I don't know what to do. I can't take care of myself. If I can't take care of myself, I can't take care of anyone else. What kicked me out of that was a lot of love and a lot of support. You know, my husband was like, I don't know what to do with this. Like, this is making it really hard for me. And he asked for support from my parents. He ended up calling my parents and saying, this is what's happening. I don't know what to do. I want to help, but I don't know how. And it was my mom recognizing, oh, I know exactly what's happening here. And this is something that I went through. This is something I worked through. And so what ended up happening is my husband sent me home to be with my parents for a week. And my mom was able to show me her experience with it, kind of show me what was happening. I think the crux of it was my adaptation, the adaptation I'd created as a little girl, which is to be perfect, get really good grades, don't get in trouble, be really good at sports, conduct myself in a way that people could be proud of so they wouldn't leave me. That was the adaptation, the little girl inside of me. And when it came up against, that's not going to work. You can't raise three kids and run a household and help with the business. You can't do that perfectly. There is no perfect. There is no, you're not getting graded. And so you can't come up with straight A's. And so my adaptation failed me.
Yeah.
And so when I went home to my mom and she kind of made all of what was happening inside of me explicit so I could look at it. Right. It was like a lot of truth telling, a lot of putting it out on the table, letting the bad thing happen so that I could see this is the adaptation. These are the limitations of that little girl. And now you've got this wise adult brain that's got to come online and ask for help and figure out how to be vulnerable and how to be human and let people see that you're struggling. That whole process is what was necessary in that moment for me. And so I think what happens is people run up against the limitation of their adaptation. Either their partner can't handle it or they realize this isn't working for me anymore and I've got to find another better way. Mm-hmm. That's when it is so important to find help. My parents both happen to be therapists and have a massive network of therapists. So they were able to help me, but that's not the case for everybody. And so finding a coach, therapist, practitioner who can really help you look at the reality in which you are living in and put a lot of truth out on the table so that you can see what's happening. I always say you can't see the label from the inside of the bottle.
Right.
And that's what happened to me. I kind of fell apart inside of this bottle and I needed someone to show me, here's what's happening. So that I could deal with it. Asking for help is so huge.
If you're listening to this, there's a good chance you're what I call a sidelined achiever. You know you're capable of more, but right now you feel stuck, set back, or like life has benched you. Maybe it was an injury, a diagnosis, a layoff, a failed business, or maybe even a broken relationship. Something knocked you off your path and left you wondering, what now? How do I even start moving forward again? You're fed up feeling this way, but you don't have a clear roadmap out. Here's what I want you to hear. You are not broken. You are not done. You are not disqualified. You're just sidelined. And sidelines are where legendary comebacks are built. And that's exactly why I created the Rinse Method. It's a framework I used to go from being told I'd never run again to crossing a marathon finish line. Rinse is a simple, repeatable process that helps you build real daily resilience, turn adversity into momentum, tap into the strength you already have, and hold yourself capable of doing what once felt impossible. If you're tired of being stuck and you're ready to create your comeback, not someday, but starting now, head over to watchmemindset.com. When you are the partner in the relationship that maybe is feeling unseen, they're feeling unheard, they're not feeling loved, but you call out one of the common myths in relationships that if they really loved me, they would just know what I need. Mm-hmm. If they really loved me, they would know what I need to hear right now. They would know how to soothe all of my worries and my issues. For someone who has been silently stewing in that belief for years, which that was definitely me, can you explain why your making request framework that you have, why is it important and what is it exactly? Because I think this is a big part of at least my failed marriage and thinking that we've been together for 20 plus years, you should just know.
Mm-hmm. And that is such a common belief. Yeah. Let me tell you, that Cinderella fairy tale idea that if they loved me enough, if they knew me enough, if they cared enough, they would just know. Mm-hmm. And the reality is, this is why there is no marriage manual. If that were true, then you'd get married and you could ChatGPT at this point, or you would be handed, here is how you take care of a partner. Yeah. Here is how you make them feel seen and loved and all of the things. But that doesn't exist. The reason why is because we're so individual. We're all so different. And none of us are mind readers, as much as we want to be, as much as we wish that was true. Nobody will ever be able to read our minds. And so it is so important to learn the skill of making requests. And the bigger picture of that is, we have to teach the people that we love how to treat us. Mm. We have to teach our partner how to treat us. We have to teach our in-laws how to treat us. And that requires making requests and setting really clear, firm boundaries out of love, because we love ourselves and we love the people that we are in contact with. And so those are skills that, like anything else, if we wanted to get good at a sport or an instrument or cooking, we would have to learn the skills. And so learning how to make requests with this framework, which I cannot claim as my own, it's RLT or relational life therapy, but that's learning how to make requests, learning how to repair, learning how to set really loving, firm boundaries. That's all required to teach other people how to treat us. And just because somebody treats their mom really well or their child really well does not mean they know how to treat us really well. We have to teach them. It is a fantasy to believe that if they loved us enough, they cared enough, that they would know how to treat us.
But shouldn't they just intrinsically know, Monica? I mean, we are here together.
That's, yeah, and if you can figure that out, you will make so much money hand over fist.
Saying, but like, let's just say you and I have been in a relationship for 10, 15 years, pre-kids, let's say, spending all this time together. Shouldn't you know how to conversate with me when I'm feeling upset, make me feel better when sad and when I'm frustrated? Not to say certain things that are going to set me off when I'm in those moods, right? Shouldn't you know those things? Because we've been together for so long. Why wouldn't you know? If you really loved me, you would have been paying attention all this time.
You're saying if you really loved me, you would figure out how to read mind. Those things change all the time. In my 20s, 30s, 40s, I've been married to my husband for almost 24 years. He should know all of it. But he doesn't. Why? Because I'm always changing and evolving. And sometimes I want him to just listen to me. Sometimes I want him to jump on my side. Sometimes I want him to just give me the solution to the problem. It's changing all the time. Sometimes I want him to give me words of affirmation that makes me feel love. And sometimes I want him to freaking acts of service, like do the thing for me.
Yeah.
But it's always changing. And how can he know if I don't tell him?
I hope our listeners and viewers know I was being a little facetious there, but that being facetious comes from truth, from my own experience and believing that, like thinking that, like why you should know these things. Like we've been together forever. And that's why I feel that this is so important, this conversation, because I think a lot of people just, that's the default. I'm upset with you because you should know me better than that, or you should know exactly how to deal with the situation. But with what you're saying, it's so important that we don't teach our partner, our spouse, how to deal with us in that moment, or how we want to be treated. And I think that what you're saying with that framework is so important for people to realize that they actually have to help other people help them get through those situations, right?
Yes. You know what comes up for me when you just said that, but I think of this all the time is that clip from Jerry Maguire,
help me,
where
help
he's
me.
In the bathroom and he's like, help me, help you.
Exactly. Yeah. But that is so pivotal to a lot of relationships, and not just in intimate relationships, but just in relationships in general for people in life, you know, dealing with coworkers or neighbors or bosses or employees, you know, for people that may feel like they're stuck in a position where other people aren't treating them right? Or why am I always remaining in like this cyclical position where I can't get ahead and I feel like it's everyone else, but it's really not necessarily something wrong with us, but how we communicate with others to communicate with us.
Yeah, because what happens is as humans, we create these manuals for people, right? Like we create a manual for this is how my husband should treat me. This is how my mother-in-law should show up. This is how my coworker should handle these tasks, right? We all, in our minds, we have manuals for how other people should do things or show up for us. The problem is when we don't share that manual with the person we are expecting to follow it.
Right.
So when you start a new job, there's a huge difference between you start a new job and they're like, here's the job description, good luck. Versus when you start a job and you're like, here is the manual of SOPs. Here's how we expect things to be done. If you have a better way, please let us know. But for now, this is how we handle these things. And here's how we expect you to do it. So we have manuals for people, but most of us walk around just expecting other people without looking at the manual to know what's in there. And a lot of us don't even know what's in there ourselves. Like, I don't like it when my husband does that thing, but I'm not going to take a minute to figure out how I think you should do it better. I just don't like that, right? And that's called complaining. As humans, we're really, really good at complaining. We'll call our mom or our best friend or our gym buddies, and we'll be like, blah, 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 and I hate it when this, and I don't like this, and if you would just do it this way, it would be so much better, right? Mm-hmm. But underneath those complaints is a longing or a request or a desire. And if we will take a moment to stop and go, if I'm complaining because my husband never takes out the trash, my desire or longing is for him to help around the house, to take out the garbage. That would really be helpful. And if I don't ever say that, how can I expect him to know my expectations? And people will say, oh, I've asked my husband to take out the trash all the time. He doesn't do it. Keep fighting for what it is that you want.
That reminded me of something that we talked about earlier when he said, take the moment, taking the time. Because in your book, Bad Marriage Advice, right, you call out some of the worst pieces of advice out there. One of them being focus on the kids right now, focus on the money right now, focus on the career right now, and you can work on your relationship later. Like you're not taking the time now to put the work in now because you're focusing on these other things that you deem are more important. So for someone who's been living that way for 10, 20, 30 years, like what are some of the signs that later has already turned into a crisis because you're not taking the time to talk about these things?
Yeah. So one of the most heartbreaking experiences that I have often, almost on a weekly basis, is I have a couple who comes to me and they're right there in that midlife empty nesting, their kids are starting to leave, their parents are aging and they've got to take care of them. They're dealing with their own types of health things. They come in and they're like, I'm not even sure we like each other. They've gone through life taking care of their kids and like managing careers and households and like doing their own thing for so long that now they're facing all these challenges. Really what they are is transitions. They're transitioning from full-time parenting to empty nesting. They're transitioning from whatever independent life to caregiving, you know, different adults. They're transitioning maybe jobs, financial status, whatever. They're transitioning and they don't know how to support each other in the big emotions that often come with big transitions. Mm-hmm. And so you've got to nurture your relationship. You've got to put it first all throughout parenting. And I know it's easy to come up with tons of excuses like, our kids can't take care of themselves. Don't we have to take care of our kids? Our partner can take care of themselves just fine. There'll be plenty of time for me to hang out with my partner after my kids are grown. Or there'll be plenty of time after we reach this certain financial milestone or this status in our business or career. But the reality is, if you don't nurture that friendship all along, you're going to get to the point of transition where you said, okay, once we hit this milestone, we're going to hang out. But you don't even know each other or like each other. You haven't invested in the relationship. So it's not going to be there for you when you need it.
mic drop, right? That is so important, because I hear you saying that, like, our identities change through time. As we grow, as our kids grow, as our lives evolve, as our work life evolves, all of that changes. And if we're not putting in the work to evolve and grow and change together, once all of those distractions that we've had from our relationship are now gone, we're left with somebody like we don't even know anymore. Like, we have nothing in common anymore. And it's like, now what do we do?
One of the funniest phrases I think people come in and say is, she's not the same woman I married. And I'm like, you guys got married decades ago. Right. That's good. Yeah. That's good news that she's not her same 20-something year old self. Like, you should probably applaud that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, if you haven't taken the time to get to know each other in all the different stages and phases of your marriage, you're not all of a sudden going to get 20, 30 years in and be like, all right, now we got time for each other. Let's do this thing.
What do you say to someone who's listening to this? And they're like, I am stuck in this point in my life where I don't necessarily want to be. I didn't see myself being here. I'm not where I want to be with my career. I'm not where I want to be with what I want to do in life. I'm in this relationship now, and I'm hearing like I have to do all of this work now to make my relationship work, because my relationship is okay. It's good enough. Mm-hmm. But it's not the dream relationship that I had when I first hooked up with my spouse 20 years ago. You may be the partner that feels unseen, be the partner that feels like your partner is withdrawn or silent. Maybe you just feel like they're just done, or they don't have the capacity to be the person mm-hmm. that you want them to be for you. What are some practical steps that an individual can start to take to move forward, to change their scenario for themselves so they can not only better their relationship, but also better themselves and how they're feeling about their current situation and the future, being able to move into the person that or the life that they had envisioned for themselves maybe 20 years ago?
Oftentimes, people will say, if you ask them, what do you value? What's most important to you? They'll almost always say, my marriage, my family, of course, it's the most important thing. And then I'll ask them, show me your planner, show me your calendar, your to-do list, your finances, and I'll tell you what you value. And so I came up with, working with couples, a 3% rule. And it's going to sound so simple, so don't discount it because of its simplicity. If you want your friendship, your relationship to grow with you, to be there for you when you need it, you have to invest in it. Mm-hmm. And that is only 3% of your time. So if you're a numbers person, you're going to love this. The great thing about time mm-hmm. is you can't buy more of it. You can't earn it back. It doesn't matter how much you can bench press or how popular you are or how much money you make. Nobody gets any more or less time than anyone else. We all get the same amount. So if you will commit to spending 3% of your time investing in your relationship, that's a start. So 3% of your time, each one of us gets 1,440 minutes in a day. If you will take 20 of those minutes and commit to getting to know your partner, emotionally connect with them, ask them what they learned today, what's exciting them right now, what's making them nervous, what you can do to make their life easier, those types of questions, 20 minutes a day. Mm-hmm. And then you will take 3 hours out of the 168 hours that we all get in a week, and you will do something fun and connecting and enjoyable. This is date night, okay? 3 hours a week. It doesn't have to be expensive, elaborate, or far from home. It just has to be intentional. Mm-hmm. And then if you will take one out of the 52 weeks of that we all get in a year, and you will go away together, connect emotionally, physically, sexually, if you will dream and plan and envision your future together, if you will do those three things, mm-hmm. 3% of your time, you will be able to stay connected. Now, that's not the end all be all. You can spend that time together and still not really be getting to the crux of it. I would say, if you're ready for this, ask your partner this honest question. What is it like to be married to me?
That's a scary question, Mom. Just even thinking about that question, I feel like I am in a really good relationship with my wife, but I think I might be scared to hear some of her answers.
So you're going to have to calm yourself down and like really get yourself to a really non-defensive, open, loving, safe place where you can really hear the answer. And if you can create space with your partner to ask yourself and her and allow her to ask you the same question, what is it like to be married to me? Then you're on your way to creating a true, I like to say, intimate friendship and passionate partnership. Be okay with your differences. My husband and I, people often come into my office as well, and they'll say, we're just incompatible. We just don't see things the same way. And I'm like, that's great. You wouldn't want to be married to your clone, would you?
Right.
Learn to appreciate your differences. For my husband and I, we're so very different. We were raised different. We were in different parts of the country, different religions, different, you know, family structures. So we often see things very differently on any topic, but we love to talk about it. And here's why. Because it is our differences that creates the passion in our marriage, and it's navigating those differences that creates a lot of intimacy in our marriage. And I wouldn't give up any of that. So learn how to appreciate each other's differences.
Some of us may need a manual or a workbook or a workshop to get to the point to where we are able to create that safe space with our spouses to ask that question, what is it really like to be married to me? And as you said, take a non-defensive stance and like really be vulnerable enough to hear the good and the bad.
Yeah. Don't worry, because if you show up defensive, your partner will feel it and they'll probably just give you a bunch of garbage. So if you really want the answer, you got to be ready for the real answer.
That's a tough place to be, I think, but very, very valuable. Well, Monica, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. I mean, you have really dropped a lot of eye-opening knowledge for myself, and I know for our listeners and our viewers. But if they want to get more information about you and about the services that you have, what is the best way for them to find you or get into contact with you?
Yeah, thank you so much. You can do all of that through my website, which is my name, monicatanner.com. So there you can find free resources like my podcast, my social media stuff, all of that. And then there's also links to my book or links to work with me.
Again, I found so much value in this conversation, and I just want to also just reiterate the importance of having an amazing spouse, having an amazing partner, because when you do that, they can truly be like your force multiplier in life, make it so much more beautiful than you have ever imagined before when you have that love that we've been talking about.
Can I challenge you one more time in closing?
You're the expert. Please do.
Just because I feel like we're such good friends now. I would say more importantly than having a great spouse is being a good spouse, because that you can actually control. You can't actually control your spouse. We want to, we try, but what you can control is yourself. So are you being a great spouse? And that will invite your spouse to be a great spouse back.
Well said. Okay. That's why she's the expert, everybody. All right. If you guys want to find out more about Monica, make sure that you do look her up. We'll put all of her links in the show notes. And we'll end this conversation as we always do. Thank you for joining us today. And remember to stay positive, stay persistent, and know that mindset is everything. And we'll see you next time.
Thank you for tuning in and being part of the Positive Persistence family. We're having a great time creating this content, and we truly hope it inspires you to embrace positivity and persistence in your own journey. If this podcast episode inspired you or entertained you, scroll down, hit those stars, and leave a comment. Your 5-star reviews and shares encourage us and help us grow the show. So until next time, stay positive, stay persistent, and remember, mindset is everything.